Blog Talk Radio.
Folks, welcome to another episode of Continue Mission. I am your host, Captain James McCormick. And let me tell you, folks, we have an excellent show, as always, lined up for you. And we're going to talk about the economy. So this is what I hear all the time. The economy is bad. But how bad is it, you say? Well, it's so bad that for the first time in 6 years, my wife did not go Black Friday shopping because we don't have the disposable income just to throw out and spend $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 on Christmas this year. So all you family members that were used to getting all those great gifts, well, expect the fruitcake this year, guys, because that's what we can afford. And you can thank your Uncle Joe Biden for that and that entire administration that has become the laughingstock of America. So, the economy is terrible. Gas prices are terrible. You have to go out and find gas prices. Right now we've got a place where we can go and we can get gas for $2.78 a gallon. $2.78 a gallon. That's amazing, right? Well, it was really amazing when it was $1.75 a gallon and $1.78 a gallon. And I can go all the way back to whenever I was younger and remember it when it was, you know, 69 and 72 cents a gallon. Well, those days are gone. They're gone, okay? But it's the other things that you're not really looking at, especially if you have kids, especially if you own your own property. You know, in a socialist world, it doesn't, you know, look, I'm telling you, if you rent, if you live in a, you know, Section 8 housing or something like that, it, you probably don't feel the economy like the rest of us. But if you own a house and property and land and assets and you have a car because you got to drive it to go to work, and then you got to get your spouse a car so that she can drive to work, you know, all of these things cost money, gas money. Wages are down. And, you know, people, it used to be back in the day, they'd say, oh, man, I just want to get a good job with insurance. You got to have enough money so you can actually live. 30 days, most Americans are out of disposable income. They've went through their savings. They have less than 30 days. Okay. And then if you get put into a situation like myself and others have been in, you know, when you're out there and you're doing contract work and they don't pay your contractor's fees for 30, 60, going on 90 days, you will find out really quickly that you're going to blow through any savings that you had. And coming about time for, you look, Christmas time, Easter time, summertime, wintertime, it really doesn't matter. There's never a good time to be broke, okay? There's never a good time to be broke. And right now, we see a lot of that going on. But before we go to that, I want to go to one more song. I have not played Mr. Bill Protzman's opus in a long time, and you know I like music. Sometimes I like to play music, folks. We always start the show out with a song. So when you come on, you'll hear music playing. You're like, wow, what's that? That is the start of Continue Mission. We have done that for 7 years. We start these shows out with music. Now, Protzman is a pianist, and he is a musical therapy. What would you call it? A musical therapy therapist? Musical therapist? One of very few in the country, and I'm telling you, man, Mr. Protzman is just such a great. Great, wonderful person. His music is amazing. So I'm going to shut up, and we're going to play, let's see here. Do I want to play Opus, or do I want to play the other Bill Protzman song, Anthem? Let's go with Anthem, folks. I love the Anthem and Opus, but let's go with Anthem. It's about 8 minutes long, so hang with me. Get your mind focused, okay? Because we're going to talk about the economy, and we're going to ask the hard questions, and we're going to be sincere about it. We're not just going to come on here just to gripe and complain. We're going to come in here to actually talk about the issues. What's going on? You know, you are not able to afford the same things you were able to afford even last year. And I promise you that's fact. You just look and see. But anyways, listen up to Bill Protzman and Anthem. Thank you. And that is Bill Priceman's anthem. Folks, sometimes you just got to play that classical music to get your mind right. Okay? A lot of stress out there. I see it. You know, I'm down here on the ground. I see a lot of people. I stand back in the shadows, and a lot of times I pay attention. I read people pretty good. And the one thing that I see is I see a lot of pain and suffering. I see a lot of people feeling, so we're gonna address this. I see a lot of people feeling like somehow Christmas is going to be terrible because you can't afford the same things you could afford last year or the year before or 10 years ago, okay? Listen, I knew that it was bad when my wife did not go Black Friday shopping. Because I'm going to tell you something. We're not talking about just, go out and do a little Christmas shopping. We're talking about this was a serious event. It occurred, it started right after Thanksgiving. And me and the boys would watch football. And my wife and the girls, they would all go shopping. All right. And I looked around, I'm like, I don't see them getting ready to go shopping. You know, and it's like, reality is, honey, we can't afford it. People say, wait a minute, man, you do pretty good. I do. I'm a retired Army officer. I make an excellent retirement. I work full time at a museum. Both my wife and I, we work every day except for Sunday and Monday. And then on top of that, I do contracting and we own a small business. Everything is flat, folks. Everything is flat. Used to be, I would be able to go out, especially during a campaign year, I'd pick out candidates that I support and I'd give them $100 a month. Nothing to do that. This year it's 25 and they're very happy to get the 25. Okay. And I support a few candidates and I'll support a couple more, but it's very limited. It's not like it used to be. And the same thing with travel. You know, I'm going to have to really maximize all of my tax exemptions this year for gas and mileage to and from work. And then hope that they don't come after me, you know, because even though you're allowed to do it, folks, understand, they're going to pile a lot of money into IRS agents. You saw what happened with January 6th. You saw what happened with the weaponization of the FBI and the CIA during the election. You know, these aren't fake things. This isn't fake news. This is real stuff that really happened that's been proven. And dozens of whistleblowers have come out. And again, I can go back to when we first started looking at Joe Biden's appointments. He picked his appointments primarily on everything except qualifications. And some folks will get mad at me for saying that. But it's true. Anytime that you have to add anything but qualifications that would give somebody additional points or whatnot, anything but qualifications, anything but experience, qualifications, education. When you start giving points for check the box, sexual orientation, race, religion, you to give me 10 points because I'm a Christian. I want you to hire me because I'm the best person for the job. So when I get in there, I feel like, you know what? I earn this. If you give me a job based on anything but my qualifications, I don't know how anybody with an ounce of integrity can accept that job. That's my opinion. And when you look at economics and you look at how money's being managed, how laws are being not even dealt with because we're dealing with petty arguments in the Congress and the Senate and the state houses, You know, I mean, even City Hall, man, it's hard to get a decision made. So these are some of the things we're going to talk about tonight on Continue Mission, is the economy and why we're in the position that we are in. But before that, I think, Father Michael, you have a couple of shout-outs you want to give tonight?
Yeah, thank you very much, James. Glad you're feeling better. Some people that attend my Bible study support this National Center for Healthy Christians. And the director used to live in our area of Williamsburg, Major General Bob Dees, retired. And I guess they offer, you said you had heard a little bit about them, community living and tiny home village, work therapy on a serene 339-acre farm and ranch, career prep and assistance, professional counseling and coaching, support veteran culture, resilience and trauma recovery programs. And I just wanted to shout out for them. They say you can make donations to Stone Ridge Fountain, which is P.O. Box 74, Alta Vista, Virginia. But basically, National Center for Healthy Christians. And I think the towers and Tunnels and Towers also are working together with them just to make life better for veterans, of which we care about very much.
You have it, folks. And yes, I had heard something about this program. As a matter of fact, back in 2010 and before that, actually 2009 when I retired, I started working in a program for veterans to agriculture. I actually wrote a piece of legislation that was passed here in the state of West Virginia, myself and a guy named Billy Wayne Bailey. God rest his soul. He is with the Lord now. He recently passed away. Billy Wayne and I worked really hard on that legislation, and he, you know, I'm going to give him credit for that, you know, because he really poured his heart and his soul into it. And him and I made many trips to Washington, D.C. together, and, you know, this was a great thing. So I'm a conservative guy, okay? I'm a conservative guy, registered Republican. So just for a point of transparency here, folks, Billy Wayne Bailey was a registered Democrat, lifelong Democrat, hardcore Democrat. But he was a blue collar Democrat, one that supported the workers. I mean, he really had that mindset of JFK. As a matter of fact, he spoke often of JFK and always had these wonderful sayings. And I could have beautiful conversations with Billy Wayne, even though we viewed differently on things. And when he died, it was just like I felt like, wow, you know, the last person that you could have a talk with on the left is now gone. So why do I say that? Because he was a beautiful person, and we managed to do a program that helped veterans in agriculture. And just like this program you're talking about, it took many people. It takes, you know, it takes a village. It really does. And agriculture, working with your hands, getting involved in things. You know, now people are doing, you know, virtual training. I mean, it's really amazing what's happening, and I'm glad to see that it's continuing to grow. So thank you for sharing that, Father Michael. I think it's a beautiful thing, and God has blessed us. Rich, you got any shout outs?
No, but I got a couple corrections to make on your little monologue. Okay. I was thinking tonight, you know, to see what you're about to talk about on the economy and Bidenomics, we're all on the same side, and so it would be a boring discussion. So I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos about Bidenomics and how great it is. So I'm willing to play the devil's advocate. Just want everybody to know, I hope I don't win this argument. But there were three cabinet members that were not hired because of their diversity. All the others, yes, but the National Security Advisor, the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of Defense were professionals in the fields that they were hired to manage. Those were three areas that Biden couldn't afford failure, and he did fail in the withdrawal of Afghanistan because he didn't listen to his professionals, and now he is, you know, in the shorts, okay?
Yeah.
So I'm going to give him credit for that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even a blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then, you know what I mean?
No, I think James, no. The thing is, in politics, you just want to, I mean, I'm not saying you personally, it's the plural you, and that is, if you don't like somebody, don't like his politics, everything he does is bad, okay? And that's not an objective way of looking at things. And unfortunately, okay, where we are in politics, and I will get into this, you know, when we look at Bidenomics, the things he's trying to take credit for is really he's just restored it back to what it was before COVID. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we'll get into that. You know, the thing is, politics, you can't be objective. No one's going to listen to you. If you're a moderate and you're objective and you're trying to make common sense, nobody pay attention to you. You have to go to the extreme.
Yeah. You know, they talked about that a little bit tonight in a debate setting where they were talking about, you know, everyone's trying to appeal to the extremes. And,
yes.
To the fringes and the radical fringes.
If you're not outrageous, no one's going to listen to you. The media will not pay attention to you.
Yeah. Well, we're pretty outrageous on here sometimes. So I think we've gained some attention. We generally gain the attention of people that disagree with us, and that's fine. The disagreements are okay. Outright blind obedience to, you know, something that is wrong is not okay. You know, that's where we go from. And, you know, no one can look out there and say, man, I'm really happy with the way things are going in America right now. I don't know if anyone can honestly say that and mean it.
It's like 7%, James, I think I've seen. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to start the conversation,
sure,
and give a backdrop of when I was 26 and, of course, a veteran and a pastor of a church. And I was able to purchase a home, $30,000. My mortgage payment was $205 a month. But the church had some to invest, and, you know, my overseer encouraged them. But, of course, I had the VA benefit because of Vietnam and so on and so forth. And I'm just wondering if our children, Rich and I discussed this a little bit today, you know, I have five children and now four since my one daughter passed, but do our children feel like they can get into the housing market? Now, two of mine are in the same way that maybe we were able to, not only because we're veterans, but because there were more opportunities. So I'd like to kind of kick it off with that. How do young people feel about families, about marriage, about homes, about a prosperous future with great opportunity in America right now?
Well, my son is expecting to buy a home. However, mm-hmm, he understands that the interest rates are very high, so they're going to come down. You know, if the interest rates are like the, you know, like everything else, like the stock market, they go up, they come down. Once the Fed has been raising interest rates in order to try to either prevent or to soften this predicted recession, and so far he's been successful at it because we haven't had a recession. But the consequences of it is raised interest rates, which has had a number of effects. One of them is expensive, you know, to get a home loan. The other one is any kind of loan. You know, if you're a small business and you want to go to the bank, well, you got to pay very high interest rates. But my son is very optimistic about it. He landed a good job, a high-paying job. And my daughter, in her case, is she's not looking to buy anything. She likes moving around. All right, so she's renting a very expensive. She's doing very well for herself. She's an entrepreneur, and she's got a very expensive apartment in on a little island off of Miami. So my kids are very optimistic.
Yeah. Now I have two of my four children are homeowners, and one just got married, and I think that they have that. Well, a year ago, but I've been talking to some young people who want to buy, but where they're living, it's like $1,700. And this is in a couple of states, just a month, just for basic rent.
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, that's pretty tough.
No, that's, you know, unfortunately, that's where we are in our right now in the economy. It is, what I understand, it's a seller's market. I mean, if you want to put your house on the market, it's probably going to sell real quick.
Mm. Yeah, my sons did, yeah.
Location, 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 guys. Location, location, location. That's the key. The interesting thing is I had a conversation with one of our listeners who said that, you know, he thanks God for the Biden administration. And let me explain to you why that he said that, okay, because I think it's important. And I agree with him on this because he says, you know, once he got in, that what it did was is it really exposed a side of the left that we didn't see. You know, I mean, the other politicians were a lot smarter about hiding what they were doing. And whenever you got this administration in, it was like, man, we're going all out. We're going full blast socialism 101. We're going to be pushing it hard. And I think that he is correct in the fact that many people who voted for Joe Biden because they were upset because of the Trump mean tweets and all of these other things, you know. And no one disagrees that Trump needs to work on that civility piece, okay? But as we had said many times on this show, you know, the proof comes down to we've had many commanders in the military. When I looked at a person, I wasn't so worried about how they dressed. I wanted to know, can you perform the mission? You know, and those that could perform the mission, that could lead, be successful, were courageous. I really didn't worry about what the uniform looked like or whether or not they brushed their teeth
and
every day.
You were a drill sergeant?
I was.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't care whether your soldiers shined their boots or not?
Whole different. Well, number one, we didn't have to shine them at that point. But
okay.
Because they were all using the brown boots. But no.
Oh, okay. We did.
Yeah. So now, difference in basic training concept, AIT, life changed from basic training once they switched over and they went from red phase to green phase to blue phase to black phase or, you know, whatever, however they phased it out. Now, when they reached those certain phases, there were certain things that we you know, yes, there are standards. There is a uniform standard. We expected them to look professional, be professional. But you don't expect the same standards when you're out there doing your job, and it really focuses more on can you do the job, you know. I think right now we're looking for someone that looks the part, i.e. my first criticism of Biden and some of his appointments. And you correctly pointed out that three of his appointments were not based on that. Good, but many of them were,
as you're saying, there is an issue with image versus substance. I agree with you.
Yes,
100%
yes.
In our culture, yes.
But
that's the point
okay.
I'm trying to
I'm,
make
I'm,
right there,
I'm
Father
gonna,
Michael.
All right, let me defend Biden on this. All right, so there's a different perspective on this. All right, for one, when you say appearance, no, we're talking representation. For example, the Interior Department is responsible for Indian affairs. Shouldn't we have an Indian, a Native American, in the head of the Interior Department, or at least in the Interior Department? We need
yes.
someone someone, community, to,
yes,
to, you know, make this, help influence the decisions on that?
Yes. The same reason why we need a veteran running the Veterans Administration, which we do not have.
Okay, there we go. There we go. Now we're getting smart, okay? So now we get a homosexual mayor as a in charge of transportation, okay? I can't defend that. I mean, I don't even know, like, okay, between the two of those, what qualified him for it? Oh, he ran for president. That qualifies him for that job. And, yeah, anyway.
Well, and I think that, you know, and I'm not so shallow-minded that I don't believe that a person that just because they're homosexual, they don't qualify. You know, as a matter of fact, I think that, that he probably could qualify for certain jobs. But this is just not one of them. And the way we found that out was how he handled the recent, you know, train. I mean, there's been several train wrecks. I mean, we joke around about the administration.
Now,
train
look, I'm gonna
real train wrecks.
Yeah, let's back off. Okay. It wasn't the train wreck. It was the spill. And that was not in his responsibility. That was EPA. The supply chain breakdown fell under his responsibility. Okay, that's transportation.
Yeah, and we've had several issues with trains. So there's an obvious breakdown in either the rail, the trains, or the people that are operating it. I've never seen so many train wrecks in my life. And in our area, we've seen three big ones within a 100-mile radius of my home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's concerning, you know, especially whenever they're dropping, you know, thousands of gallons of PFAS, you know, firefighting foam that goes into the river. Everybody's talking about it. And now all of a sudden it's like, well, every water system, you know, within that 100-mile radius now has PFAS in it, you know. First, how did the train wrecks happen in the first place? Is that a breakdown in the Transportation Administration to ensure that we have a safe mode of transportation? I think so.
Nope. I'll argue it. Look, I'm only arguing
so what
because
caused it?
We need a debate. We need a debate, okay? So yep. I'm playing the devil's advocate.
I know, but what caused
infrastructure,
it? What do you think caused it? Old infrastructure.
Old infrastructure. We have neglected to invest in our infrastructure.
Yeah, Trent Father Trump made a big deal about that when he was coming in, you know, about, you know, compared to other countries and bridges falling. I'm not as cognizant of what's going on, even in my own area, but Rich pointed a few things out to me today that I was unaware of. So, I mean, even President Trump felt that our country was falling apart. And I guess you go back to Eisenhower, you know, with the roads and interstates and stuff like that.
The Interstate Commerce Act.
Yes, yes.
He created the Interstate Commerce. No, he signed the Interstate Commerce Act.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But
I think that's interesting.
Flights have been in decline. Mm-hmm. Our ports are falling behind. And rail, I don't think, look, I can't speak from this, from any other knowledge, but you're saying if there's a problem, an increase in train wrecks,
yeah.
I think when we look at all the modes of transportation out there, rail is probably the lowest priority. I'm just going to say that because working in the military, how the military deals with different modes of transportation, rail is like the lowest priority. Okay? So I assume that is reflected in the nation. So when it comes to investing in infrastructure, yeah. You know, now here I'll say this, all right, so why haven't we been investing in infrastructure? Now, when I heard Trump say that, you know, we need to modernize, he didn't do it. I was really disappointed with him. He didn't do it. Biden passed an infrastructure bill. Trump advocated for an infrastructure bill. The Republicans should have done it. This is a win-win situation. Whoever passes the bill are the heroes. I don't know why the Republicans didn't pass it when they had a chance. Okay? Biden got it through. Now, I will tell you. Now, Father Michael asked about it. If I'd seen it, I said, yeah. Look, I drive up and down I-64, which is from Richmond to here. They expanded it. Normally I'm driving, when I'm coming from the Norfolk area and we hit Jefferson exit, all of a sudden it goes from 3 lanes to 2 lanes and it backed up. It was always backing up. So, and this is before Biden, this bill was passed before Biden was elected because they widened it. It took well over a year for them to widen it. And they widened it all the way to my exit, which is great. Rarely do I, unless there's an accident, rarely does traffic come to a stop on my way home. Okay. And now, thanks to the other infrastructure bill, we have the money to now widen the rest of 64. It will be 3 lanes all the way to Richmond. And they're, if you're trying to get across the peninsula to Norfolk, you got to time it just right. If you wait till after 4:30 to hit the James River Bridge Tunnel, expect a long wait. Well, they're building another tunnel. They're expanding that. That's part of the infrastructure bill. Okay. So I've seen it. I've seen it in our area. But these infrastructure improvements began under Obama. Not under Obama, under Trump. Okay.
Yeah. Well, they did. And to be honest with you, it's interesting you brought up the Eisenhower interstate system. Where did he get the idea for that? Well, actually, Father Michael did. Talked about the Eisenhower. Yeah. So where did he get the idea for the interstate?
Well, actually, okay, what inspired him to want to improve this?
Go ahead and say it.
Was the 1919 Transcontinental Convoy.
Right.
Lieutenant Colonel Eisenhower was on this convoy of trucks that drove from Washington, D.C. to San Francisco to see if it was feasible. You got to understand, there were stretches that there were actually no roads that they drove across, okay? He firsthand saw the need to be – see, all we had was rail that connected the East Coast with the West Coast, okay?
Yep.
And so he saw that – and you know what, the first highway that you could actually drive or paved road from the east to the west was Route 66. And it went through, I think it came from Lincoln, Nebraska to Oklahoma City and then went west. Okay.
Yep.
But what you're wanting me to say is it was the Autobahn in Germany. that Hitler built.
Yeah.
That is, when he saw that, he's like, we need that in the United States. And so when he became the president, he got Congress to pass the Interstate Commerce Act, and we built all these interstate highways. Okay?
Yep. Yep.
Now,
exactly.
There's losers on that, by the way. No, there's losers. You think everybody wanted that?
No.
What happens? What happens when you have a farm that's been in your family for a long time, and they come through and do eminent domain and said, hey, you sell it to us. We're just going to take this price or take the price we're going to give you after we just claim eminent domain because we're building a highway through here. Okay. Yeah. It there's winners and losers.
And there were a lot of ghost towns created because there were some stretches of roads that is like, nah, we're not going to take the interstate around that town. So if you go out west, as you're very familiar, living out there, some of these boom and bust towns and stuff, everybody just liked the rail. Everybody wanted the railroad to come through their town, and didn't happen that way. And so a lot of small communities that were thriving, bustling, moving, no longer cease to exist, or they, you know, they no longer exist. So, so it's good and bad, but it opened up a pathway for us to drive coast to coast in America, which we can do that. So kudos, kudos. Infrastructure in on December 15th, 1967, in the little sleepy town of Point Pleasant, West Virginia, during the evening hours, it was very cold. It was snowing. There was a large bridge that connected West Virginia and Ohio known as the Silver Bridge. And right after dark, it was crowded. You know, it was just after 5 o'clock.
Wait, James, are you trying to sell your – put in a plug for your Mothman coffee again?
No, 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 I'm not doing that. No, I'm going to say this. So an eye bolt snapped and the bridge collapsed. 46 people died, okay? Several cars plunged into the river. I have a museum. We have an actual model of the bridge. It's in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Lots of stories, lots of pictures, lots of personal stories of people that survived that fateful day. And then, of course, many family members. So what that did is that brought upon a whole new series of bridge inspections, not just in West Virginia, but all around the country. So if you look at December 15th, 1967, Silver Bridge collapse, and then you look at the immediate fallout as far as inspections, and, I mean, you know, people went to jail for that thing. You know, there were some construction problems, there were some maintenance problems, there were some issues with it, and a lot of people died. So as you look at our infrastructure now, I think that our infrastructure in some places is just as bad as it was December 15th, 1967. Would you agree?
Well, we had a bridge collapse in Connecticut. Can I just mention that what James had said? You know, people were traveling on 95 and the bridge just collapsed and people, you know, went into the water and so on and so forth. And so, yeah, I think there's a prevailing problem, you know, and I don't know if it's the state's responsibility or if it's the federal government that has to come in and fix everything rather than, you know, senators and congresspeople going, you know, as far as disbursements and things of that nature. But, yeah, it's still happening and still killing people.
All right. Well, what I'm going to say is Virginia has been doing very well on infrastructure, right? I mean, we've been getting a lot of money. It really comes down to, I mean, when everybody says they're against or they're for term limits on politicians, you know, your Senate and congressmen, well, except when it comes to your state. And so you want that career politician who has been there long enough who can get the deals. Virginia, we do very well on money to improve our infrastructure. Other states aren't doing so well. So what I'm going to say is it's not nationwide. It depends. It goes from state to state.
So the Silver Bridge disaster of 1967 brought about federal regulations and inspections and different agencies, obviously. Can you tell me who the president was on December 15th, 1967?
67 would be Lyndon B. Johnson.
And he is a
Democrat.
Democrat.
That's right. The state of West Virginia.
Wait,
look at your infrastructure right now.
No. When was it built?
1928. Okay. It was built in 1928.
All right. So your point about LBJ being the president when the bridge collapsed?
My point being is that we didn't have any federal regulations that were designed to inspect and prevent these kind of things from happening. There was no mandated.
Wait. So so what we're basically saying, every president or every Congress before 67,
mm-hmm.
not the Congress and the president in place at that time. It's everyone before that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I'm in I'm in command of a unit, everything it does or does not do is my responsibility. So I would see that as my responsibility. Now, were there changes made? Yes. The changes didn't actually come about until almost 2 years later in 1969.
All right, James. All right, if you want to bring that up, what mm-hmm. were the hints, okay? Mm-hmm. Why would we need bridge inspections? You build a steel bridge. Whatever mm-hmm. was the indication that we needed bridge inspections?
Well, I'm sure if you go back and you look at
disaster, you do need an accident like that to be able to teach you we need bridge inspections.
Mm-hmm.
We're usually not.
Why does everything have to be on the federal level, though? Why can't the state take responsibility? You know, we've talked about subsidiarity powering down.
Mm-hmm.
It's always got to be Big Brother. I can understand regulations. But aren't we supposed to exercise our leadership and take care of our own people and our own territory?
Yeah.
But how do you know there's a problem? That's my point is, how do you know there's a problem?
Uh-huh.
It's creaking when you go over it.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Well, and in our case in West Virginia, we had an 80-plus year reign of Democrat rule here. So, you know, obviously the same party was in charge. So,
actually, James, I was waiting for you to make a comment about they did get the warning. It was the Mothman.
The Mothman gave the warning.
Plug your Mothman coffee.
Yeah, Mothman
coffee. The legend of the Mothman.
Yeah. Well, so, and you know, that story, all of that stuff came up. You know, that was a painful thing that happened to this community. So when that bridge fell, the economic disaster that fell upon this community is just now starting to shift. So we didn't see any kind of real prosperity in this area for probably 50 years after the bridge fell. So why do I say that? I say this because there has to be a level of, so how do we know when to change the oil in our car? You know, it used to be you were smart enough. Well, you know, like,
yeah.
But before the lights came on, we watched, right? We said every 3,000 miles, we got to change the oil in our car. You remember those days? And we'd take it in, we did it ourselves. Every day we come out, that tire looks a little bit low. Let me check that air on that tire. We don't do that. We don't do that on our personal vehicles anymore because we've become – and so here's what I'm saying. I'm saying that we are – when you talked about infrastructure crumbling earlier in this day and age, number one, there's no excuse for it because we do have rules in place to prevent that. But number two, expect massive disasters because of infrastructure failure. And I believe you, Rich, when I say you said the infrastructure is the reason for these train wrecks. I believe that. You're right. 100% right on that. So,
can I bring up something about state car inspections?
You know,
we take care of our own cars, right? But we have accountability once a year, at least in Virginia, where they go through it with a fine-tooth comb. Now, I think it would be an overreach if I drove into Maryland, drove into Delaware, go to New Jersey, that I had to have an inspection at every state because they have different, laws or rules.
Regulations.
What I'm
regulations.
Trying to say, this different regulation. But what I'm saying is that if the federal government has to do anything, it takes away from us. And I know we want the money from them about taking care of our own situation. You know, we can't blame it on them. If we have a bridge falling apart and our people are going over it every day and we hear it cricking or something's happening, you know, it's a shame when the federal government has to come in when we should be managing it ourselves. And I just think that's where we get so many regulations. You know, if you look at early governmental history, They talk about being self-governed, but when mm-hmm. a people are not self-governed, you need a lot of police officers. You need a lot of, you know, a police state when you can't govern yourself. And so mm-hmm. that whole concept I've shared in the past called subsidiarity is powering down. Now, if we can't afford it, then we could look to the federal government to give us some assistance. But we should be taking care of our own stuff rather mm-hmm. than there having to be a nationwide thing, especially as big as our country's become. I mean,
we found that even in the church. Okay.
We have these dioceses one bishop has 1,000 priests.
Now, hold on a second. Go ahead. Go ahead, Father Michael. What?
I'm saying the same thing. We've had some issues where one bishop, you know, has maybe, a couple of assistants, but there may be 1,000 priests. So when you have everything coming from the top, you can't manage locally. You know, we always talk about acting locally, thinking globally, and I just think we have too much of a dependence on the federal government coming in where we should mm-hmm. be able to do it ourselves. And then if we absolutely need financial assistance because of a disaster or something, then we should look to them.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Yeah, the state actually managed exactly what you're talking about mm-hmm. with the bridge. So there was a state entity that did do checks, and obviously they missed some things. And a lot of people died. And that's where I said there was people that went to jail over this bridge collapse. So how do we prevent this from in the future? Is it a, you know, I don't think it's a, listen, I poke at the Democrat thing, but I don't think it's a Democrat issue. I really don't. I think it's an American issue. I think it's an American responsibility issue. I think that there are plenty of laws and regulations and agencies that are designed to prevent that. But I also believe that we have become, especially in the federal government, the employees are inherently lazy. I mean, so I'm just going to say that because all I have to do is go in and read complaint after complaint after complaint against managers in the federal government. I read one about an IMSHA guy who was upset because they wouldn't let him work at home. And he created this big stink, you know, about not being able to work from home, and he sued them. And they eventually gave him a job at the VA. Imagine that. So
all right.
Moves him to the VA.
How are we going from what does this have to do with infrastructure? Because we started out this conversation about Bidenomics, and now we're about collapsing bridges.
No, because it has to do with infrastructure. It has to do with responsibility.
No, it doesn't. It's money. The thing is, requires funding.
Yeah. If you want me to answer that, then I'm going to tell you exactly why. So it comes down to the ultimate responsibility to ensure that things are done. And so we talked about people in positions of authority,
right,
that are running agencies, whether it be our economic development agencies or whatnot,
mm-hmm.
That really have no place in there. And then the downside to that is you have employees under that I believe have gotten into a system. You know, you get a federal job. We've all had federal jobs. You're pretty much there, man. It's hard to fire somebody in the
mm-hmm.
federal government.
Mm-hmm.
It's extremely hard
right.
to fire them. But the end result is we get poor craftsmanship, poor workers, poor observation of economic downturns and policies that are being promoted or enforced. That's what
right.
I think the problem is.
So basically what you're telling me is Virginia has better federal workers and state workers than West Virginia does. Because everything I look around, I see mm-hmm. Virginia's doing it right. We're getting the money. Our politicians are getting
mm-hmm.
Virginia the money we need to improve this state. Okay.
Rich, can I ask a question? Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go
Rich,
ahead.
Can I ask you a question? The
yeah.
Army Corps of Engineers, how does that work? Is that government funded, and how does the state get access to their expertise?
I mean, I'm going to be guessing. The only thing I know, where I've actually worked with seen the Army Corps of Engineers mm-hmm. is like the
inland waterways.
Mississippi River. They do the dredging.
Yeah, inland waterways.
Okay.
Inland waterways.
Yeah, it's waterways and ports. Okay.
Well, and locks and dams.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Okay.
So Katrina, they were there with Katrina.
They're responsible for flood walls as well.
I wasn't involved in, and I didn't even do. I wasn't involved in any research on Katrina. So,
my
question is, why are you asking that? What's the Army Corps of Engineers?
Because I want to know, money wise, if we're spending all this money on infrastructure. What responsibility does the government have, and what responsibility is totally from our taxes? You know, I remember when we used to pay tolls in Connecticut, and finally they got rid of them, you know, but it was like you were always funding something that never was getting done, and I'm just wondering what the
government that's California. That was, you know, it's like, you know, that was the complaint Look, seriously, DeSantis can't debate. You and I had that discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I could have taken on Newsom and turned that debate around on him. DeSantis can't. He can't think on his feet. So he's not a debater and he's not a leader. And the thing is,
say he's not a leader.
Well, no, maybe I shouldn't have said that. I mean, he would probably be more of a deliberate thinker than somebody
uh-huh.
who's quick on his feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But.
Yeah. So what does DeSantis and the debate have to do with the Army Corps of Engineers? I'm trying to.
Nothing. The thing is, I don't even see where the Army Corps of Engineers fits into this because
okay, well, let me
everything
try to
we're trying to
a little
prove,
bit.
Go ahead.
It's financial, right? This is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
money. We hire contractors to improve our roads. We hire contractors to improve our airports. We hire contractors to improve our port systems. We hire
but
contractors.
But it takes away from our state budget, does it not?
No. That's the whole point. No. What you're missing is, look, we pay. Oh, see, the thing is, what I was getting at is when Newsom was talking about, you know, oh, well, one of the criticisms is that they have this gas tax. California
right.
is paying like a dollar more a gallon than everybody else.
Right.
That gas tax.
And he's saying
is
that they're being harassed.
Their highway system, stuff like that. But it isn't.
Yeah.
So the question is, where is that money going? Where is that money going? Now, the thing is, the federal government, all right, so the state has money to improve the state highways. The federal government
mm-hmm.
raises money
there
for improving the interstate system.
Yeah. Okay.
And it goes to the state.
Yeah, and you have county and
so
municipal.
That federal money, I don't think the federal government is hiring these guys to expand I-64. The federal government gives that money
to the state,
to the Commonwealth of Virginia, who then contracts these guys to expand I-64.
So let me say this, that nearly all roadways maintained, whether at and municipalities are responsible for certain roads as well. So the mayor, who's a friend of mine, you know, they get federal money to fix city roads. So, and then there is obviously taxation and fees and things
mm-hmm.
like that they gather,
mm-hmm.
you know, for being part of a municipality. And then counties, the same thing with counties. So it's like really honestly, you're looking at a city road system, a county road system, a state road system, and a federal, you know, road
Correct.
System that includes bridges. So they have a responsibility for the bridges. The difference here is that municipalities have not been delegated to do bridge inspections. The state must inspect all bridges, whether it's a county bridge, whether it's a county road or a municipal road, that's a state bridge. So That's the difference. And I think some of that was changed here in particular because of the Silver Bridge disaster, because there was, you know, that bridge, ironically, was a toll bridge. So, you know, there you go. Isn't that crazy?
The money wasn't
and
being
I
used.
Thought we were here to bash Biden.
We don't have to bash him. We just go down and go fill your gas tank up. You can bash him right there all day long.
Wait a minute. No, I'm telling you right now. Okay, here's my chance.
Mm-hmm.
Gas prices are down from what they were before.
So they were at three.
Has
he?
Yeah, they used to be $4 a gallon. Now they're below $3 a gallon.
Sure. But what were
not
they
either.
When
not
he...
me.
What were they
depends
when he came into office? What were the gas
okay.
prices
well,
when he came into
go.
Office?
Actually, you believe? Get this. I want to tell you this. I saw a report. You're not going to hear. Biden will probably try to take credit for, you know, look, he raised prices before he lowered them.
Sure.
Right. But
that's
I
a trick.
Saw
that's
a trick, report yeah. that essentially said we are now pumping as much oil as we used to under Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So Biden
I read that report.
Came into office and went to war against fossil fuels is pumping more as much oil as his predecessor did. They're keeping this quiet. You're not hearing them brag about it. They talk about the prices coming down. The prices came down because he enacted Trump policies.
So, Rich, why he's doing that is because they have to replace the Federal Reserve that they have depleted, you know, because they pulled from the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, no,
so
you're right.
What,
you're right. No, no. That
what
was,
they're doing
that
is,
was stealing
is this
from
a short
our,
term.
That was stealing from our future.
It was.
The
our
strategic,
kids' and our
the
grandkids.
Strategic Reserve was for a crisis, a crisis that a foreign country created, not you created. Okay.
So let me say this. Let me say this. This won't last long. So this is temporal. So what are
wait,
you doing?
Wait, no. What? We're pumping more oil? No.
Look, we're pumping more oil, but once the Federal Reserve get to the limits, you know, get built back up, it's going to stop.
No, we're not pumping out of the Federal Reserve. We're done with it.
No,
we're talking about
Rich.
What
I understand
it was like
that
under Trump. Yeah.
Now, what I'm saying is you're talking about there's more oil being pumped right now from the ground, and you're right, and it's being done to replenish the Federal Reserve, but it's being done temporarily, and it is being done. Let me tell you, I watch these leftists really close, okay, and I sit on a board for the Oil and Gas Workers Association of America here, and we watch them. Do that. They say, oh, well, we're going to go away from fossil fuels. But what do? They pump more oil to refill the reserves, and then they get out and brag about, well, we're actually pumping more oil under Biden than what we did under Trump. Ha, ha, ha. You know, and it's all a political game.
I haven't heard him brag. No. I haven't heard anybody brag about that.
Go to the OWGA website. I can show you the leftists that are on there.
Okay. But
you know,
see, you and I are in
on
agreement
Twitter.
That they're now pumping.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not
it'll
drilling.
Stop soon. It'll stop soon.
How?
It'll stop.
How?
Soon.
Wait. How will it stop?
Because they're going to fill up the reserves to a certain level, and they're going to stop.
Oh, okay.
They're
going to
get
it. That's your
that's
prediction.
That's what I'm saying.
All right. No.
100%.
That's your prediction. Right now, there is. See, no one's. First of all, I'm not. Because Biden went to war with fossil fuels, he can't admit that he screwed up, and he's going back to Trump policies of pumping, okay? You're predicting that when we fill up the strategic reserves that he's going to stop, okay?
100%.
I don't think he's going to do it because he wants to keep those gas prices down. That's our difference in opinions.
We are both
in agreement.
He
we're
wants to
in
keep
agreement.
The gas prices down, not because he wants to help the American people, but because he wants to help and secure his leftists that he wants to get reelected or elected.
Yeah, no, he wants to he needs the gas prices down to get reelected. Okay,
correct.
So we're in agreement that's one thing we're in agreement in. he is now pumping as much oil as Trump used to.
Yep, following along like a little pup.
Yeah, you know? That's right. He is not bragging, but you're never going to hear him brag about that.
Well, and he's doing those things as well. You know, his son just got charged with I don't know how many different charges.
Yeah.
I forget, 19, I think.
Right.
And of course, Donald Trump, all of the things that they've got on him, that's serious stuff. But poor old Hunter, he was just a poor guy that was addicted to drugs like most of the people
let's,
in America.
Let's not bring up him because that would be a big tangent. Let's keep focused on Joe, okay? All right. I would just throw this
Joe
out.
Is
I was
Hunter.
Reading articles on it, and Hunter Biden's lawyer, defense lawyer, said, if his last name was not Hunter, we would not have his case. And I'm sitting there going, if his father wasn't Joe Biden, he'd have been in jail
prison
a long time ago. Okay.
Probably executed by now,
No,
especially for
executed.
That stuff with those kids.
I mean, he would have been in jail a long time ago. Don't tell me the reason this is a political vendetta. No. Their only reason he is being finally charged for the crimes he's committed is because we have a Republican majority in the House. Okay? And
let's ask
they're putting
the
pressure
question
people
so
and
don't
whistleblowers.
Get on
they said whistleblowers in the FBI.
Right.
Yeah.
But let's ask the question. 3 years ago at Christmas time, okay, and all of our financial situations changed, my wife retired and stuff like that. Did you feel as prosperous? Did you feel as free? I remember during the Reagan years, and, I was pastoring, and but we just felt like we were ahead of the game. We felt like there was some prosperity. I know there were problems as
all right,
well.
All right.
But
wait. Look, stop. Let's take a break. Okay. The problem we had, we haven't even discussed Bidenomics. All right. The problem,
this will bring us into that.
We had
this
a really good debate.
Well,
we really had a good discussion last week over the debate. But see, Friday, Father Michael and I meet because we're working on a paper he's writing on, and then we talk about the show. And the problem is, Father Michael, you pick up from where our discussion ended instead of allowing the audience to understand the background to it. Okay. Let me talk about Bidenomics.
So, hold on a second. Before you go there,
I'm
going
to try
to cover Bidenomics
real quick. Right,
I think this
quick,
is very important. I think it's very important. I like what Father Michael was saying. Do you feel that you're economically...
No, I want to set the stage for that, okay?
Go ahead.
Because Bidenomics is telling you your life is better.
Right. Yeah, I feel it. Yeah, I feel it every day. Yeah. I feel it. Go ahead, Rich. Are you there? Did we lose him? Can you hear me, Father Mike?
I can hear you. Rich.
Okay. All right. The other thing is, he's added. 199,000 new jobs to the economy. Now, most of those jobs are federal government jobs, and you strikers, remember the strikes we had? We had the auto worker strike, and we had the screenwriter strike. Those guys are coming back to work. Okay, all right. But the thing is, when you look at everything, more people are at work. Wages are higher. Inflation is down.
Right now?
I mean, all these are facts.
Whose
gas
facts?
Prices are down. Okay?
Okay.
This economy is now better than it was when Biden became president. That's Bidenomics. Now,
good, but
Father Michael,
I
tell me how
that,
you feel about it.
You know, you have a sense of well-being and a sense of a future. You know, I'm concerned more about my children. It just doesn't seem, not only with manufacturing, or it just doesn't seem that we're prospering. And we said something today about the immigrants taking a lot of jobs away from certain classes or certain groups of people in our country.
No.
And
I just
don't see it.
Blacks and Latinos.
Yes,
right.
You said, yes.
Yeah. All right, yes. So we have this
so they don't feel like
immigration of illegal aliens coming in here. They have to work. What jobs are they going to do? They're going to start out with the low-paying jobs, okay?
Yes.
Who are the majority? What's the majority of the people who are doing those jobs? Okay, blacks and Latinos, minorities, okay?
Yeah, Latinos.
So the illegals are now competing for jobs.
At the roof, at the church, the guy came. He couldn't speak English. He had somebody else with him. I was talking to the boss. I don't know that the person's skilled.
Right.
But I think
here's the thing. You want
to
know what your problem is, Father Michael?
What's that?
Your wife doesn't speak Spanish. Now, if your wife spoke Spanish, I'm telling you. We hire immigrants all the time to work on our stuff, especially Latin.
Well, I'm going to have to invite you next time I have an issue.
The other thing is my wife is really, really good at arguing and negotiating a price, okay? I'm like, what do you want? Okay. She's like, she'll squeeze every drop of blood out of a damn penny, okay? Middle Easterners and Latins love to haggle over price. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm just joking.
So, setting the stage, Gump comes to the question: are you better off now than you were 3 years ago? I will answer that by saying no. I'm actually in a much worse position. I make more money, but I spend more money. In either travel, fees, taxes,
food,
repair, everything's more expensive. I just had our washer and dryer repaired, okay? $500 to repair the washer and dryer, $500. And that was me packing it up, taking it, and bringing it back in, $500. Yeah, you think about it. There was a time not too long ago, probably 3 years ago, I could have went and bought a washer and dryer for $500.
Right.
But you can't do that now. So, auto repairs, outrageous. Repair costs, tires, $280 a pop. You know, shall I go on? I think that
actually the way
electric.
I like to describe it is I like to go inch. Okay.
I think
now
you're breaking
retired,
up, Rich.
Okay.
Breaking up a little bit.
Now that I'm retired, I don't have as many expenses as I used to. And I've had friends who retired before me say the same thing. That when you look at your budget, you're going, okay, I'm going to actually be making less money when I retire than when I worked. But the guys who retire, you don't know how it's going to work out. And then they come back and say, it actually works because, one, you're not driving as much, and you're not eating out every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll usually go to lunch with a friend, a colleague, once a week instead of every day. But I will tell you this. Go to a restaurant. The price of the meal is twice what it was 2 or 3 years ago.
Yep.
I
heard a restaurant owner explain why, and it's due to the economy.
Go ahead.
And you know who I'm talking about, who owns several restaurants.
Sal. Oh, my gosh,
And
that guy's the most successful. Yes, Sal by Victor.
And because of the economy, I mean, it's killing all of us.
That's right. Everything's gone up. Everything has gone up. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Wages go up. You know. Here's the thing I used to tell. Go ahead.
I don't think that the wages definitely are going up in relative fashion that meets the increase.
You're right. You're right. All right. So your first question, are we better off? I'm doing okay. And I'll tell you why. Because, and I told Father Michael this today, I sold out. I went to work for the man. Okay, if you're from the 60s, I went to work for the man, okay? I sold out. I compromised. I gave up my individuality. I went to work for the man. So I served in the Army, and then I went to work for the man as a civilian, okay? And I have a government retirement. And what that means is, and I saw that when they're talking about inflation, the government, if you have a government like Social Security, or like in my case, the federal retirement, when they give you the annual cost of living increase, it keeps up with inflation. Unfortunately, in the commercial business, it doesn't. So all these people who are getting, what I hear, people who are getting raises out there in the business world is not keeping up with inflation. Mm-hmm. And so
how about our disabilities? Does that count, James? And
I don't think that I have not seen an increase ever. I have never seen an increase in my VA disability check. Okay. I think that is a fixed rate.
They do raise those from time to time.
I really don't see it. I don't see I calculate, you know, my disability has been pretty much the same since I drew it.
It'll come up. It comes up sometimes up like 6%. You know, it's a slow increase. But
back to your question is, when I was going to debate you guys on this, and about, Bidenomics is actually successful.
Yeah.
The thing is, for me,
you can't even say that.
I have a comfortable income because I became a federal worker. I sold out. I went to the work for the man, and the government, their pay increases match. They keep up with inflation, but the rest of business doesn't. Okay, it's about the bottom dollar. And Pachella and I have already had the discussion a lot because we can go through the fact that your problems. See, if I was Biden and I was going to debate you guys, I said your problems probably are on your economy. Okay, and you know, Father Michael admitted that his wife retired from a good paying, left a good paying job to take something less stressful, okay, and has lower income. James, now you actually admitted that, no, your income is remaining the same. You have a good paying job, but you also have these contracts on the side. And supposedly with an increased income, you're not be able to spend as much as you used to. Okay. We have three different scenarios here.
That's right.
Yeah. So Father Michael is on the low end where there has been some life choices where his income has been reduced. Okay. So he's had to cut back. And James is, no, he's actually increased his income and he still is having, you know, he has to cut back on his lifestyle, whereas with me, I have a guaranteed federal income that will keep up with inflation, and so I'm not seeing any You know, I'm spending more money for lunches, but guess what? My income is keeping up with that.
And so you've also done some additional work like substituting and stuff like that. And, of course,
I have my royalty checks.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I'm going to tell you this. No. The real issue is, all right, you talk about 401K. I have a thrift savings plan, and the problem is I'm tapping into that. And I'm telling you that basically by when I turn 85, I'm probably going to become a greeter at Walmart.
There you go. You better be able to afford the gas to get to work.
The Lord has been
Walmart,
faithful.
Walmart's only like 5 miles from my house, so I can walk there. Yeah,
maybe,
but at 80,
maybe.
I probably might have trouble walking.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So,
well, God has always been faithful to us. And with all, you know, the children, all that we did with foster care and everything. But overall, I guess I'd like to just address the theme of hope. Do you really think, and not that finances is everything, but it does impede what we can do as a family. It does impede what we can give as far as an expression of generosity. And I just want to know from you gentlemen, if you think people have hope that our economy is going to get any better. I mean, a lot of things
are
going on in the world.
You worded it differently. All right. When we were discussing this, this is why I'm glad the conversation we had is to get us to this point.
Right.
It's not us. It's the younger generations.
That's right.
And I talked about this, okay, there is, from the polls, right? Look, the economy is doing good. I don't know about your children, but my children are doing well.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't. Now, my daughter definitely does, my son. But when you look at the polls, people today do not have the same optimism about the future that we used to.
Yeah, that's because, look, the reality is while you might say that they're doing well, let them go without a paycheck for 35 to 45 days. Do they have the savings to be able to sustain them for 2 months? Most people don't. And that's the problem because they are dipping into their savings in order to be able to, let me tell you, heating and electric bills have went up significantly.
Yes.
Yes,
yeah.
Okay.
If you have a household that has more than two people living in it, it's tough. I mean, if you're not making at least $60,000 a year, and that's just going to make it at
$60,000 a year. Wait, that's $60,000 a year in West Virginia. We're not talking about $60,000 a year in Virginia.
You couldn't make it. You couldn't make it in Virginia.
Okay.
You couldn't make it on $60,000, could you?
Higher cost of living, okay?
You would need $100,000 a year, right?
Yeah.
And even then, because what we're not looking at, we're also looking at taxes. You know, like I have a city tax. I have, you know, we have businesses. We have property. So we pay property taxes. We pay city taxes. We pay county taxes. We pay state. We pay federal taxes. It's all the time. I mean,
James, you don't get any
hand
exemption because of your status
as a disabled veteran.
Yes.
You know, they do have a small homestead exemption, but it's just for the taxes for my home, but it's only 30%. So, I'm thankful for it.
But I want to get to this issue.
Still $680. In taxes.
But when Pacella brought it up, it's about the optimism of the generations following behind us.
See, that's right.
Father Michael and I, we're at retirement age. And James, you're military retired, okay? But you're still working. Father Michael is going to work, him and Doreen are going to work till they drop. because they just have that work ethic, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Me, and we had this discussion today. I said, like, I've got a really good, secure retirement. And what that allows me to do, that I've climbed two mountains, and now I can claim a third mountain. In other words, no, I'm not going to kick back. I'm sleeping in later. I'm lazy. Yeah, but the thing is that this financial security allows me to work on other projects. I'm a writer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's things like that. And my martial arts. Okay, I'm wondering. You know, it's like so. If I was to go in to meet with anybody, you know, and everybody's going to brag about what they're doing. They say, so what do you do? I says, I teach martial arts in a community center.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, that's my passion. That's my passion. There's no money in it, but it's my passion. Okay. Yes. I get so much out of it, but the thing is, my retirement allows, and it's not that I'm just doing this for myself. No, I am. Aikido has come under fire as being a worthless martial art, and I've taken on the challenge. And in doing so, I figured out what the problems in Aikido are. And I've been able to show how Aikido will work against other martial arts. I've developed... I've produced three videos showing sparring, two of boxing, one with Muay Thai. And now that a lot of people are coming around to believe that Aikido actually works, then I've got eight instructional videos showing how, okay, you saw the stuff we do in the sparring, here's how we actually got it.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah.
So the thing is, it doesn't make a great contribution
yeah.
to society or whatever, it's a small contribution. My retirement allows me to focus on that. And then again, we talked about publishing.
It's
one of the books I want to write is about the Motor mm-hmm. Transport Corps in World War I. Probably
yeah.
going to be like the least read book, but it's an important book because there's a few people want to know how, trucking operations actually evolved.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's
let me can I interject
awesome.
Something because
yeah.
I
Go
think
ahead.
What you're doing is very significant. And I'll be 70 next month. My wife's 72. And certainly God has been so faithful to us. You don't make a lot of money and have 401ks from being in the ministry and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But we are optimistic, as to the purpose that we have. And you're expressing your purpose. So it's not all about money. And for us three men, our provision is from the Lord. We thank God for the government and things we've invested in, we've given ourselves to. But we have faith. I mean, we talked today, Rich, what you went through that time of faith when you were doing your master's. And we all have stories.
Yeah, my
I have
trial.
Two houses,
what I described
for seven
to you
and a half months.
Place. My yeah. seven-year trial period, right,
okay.
where my
was,
faith
yep.
was tested.
Mm-hmm. And so if we learn that as young people, young men, we can then use those principles and lessons when we're older. And, when we went back into the military, we took a pay drop, and then I had two houses, and God miraculously provided. I got a very short and small income after being at one church for 20 years. Like $500 a month for a year. And, we are looking at these things.
Wait,
there's a lot
no,
of mismanagement.
Let me throw
hold up,
in
hold
this
up.
One. Because,
mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Because, Father Michael, I remember, because remember, you and I were friends when you were an Army chaplain. You had
mm-hmm.
a secure job with a guaranteed retirement.
Right.
A guaranteed retirement. All you had to do was put in your 20. And you gave that up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think
yep.
Doreen was really happy. Look, Doreen may not have been happy about the pay, the drop in pay when you went from being a successful pastor of this community to be an Army chaplain. But the thing is, he knew you had a guaranteed federal retirement. That's what you gave up to follow the calling you had.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. We make those choices, and we're see, Paul talks about contentment, and I think that, you know, we've had much, we've had little, but the secret is to be content, not complacent. Mm-hmm. And I think that we all have to come, you know, and reconcile what's really important. Is it more things, or is it more peace or contentment?
Yeah.
And so on and so forth.
All right, all right. But the thing was, I think the segue to this, see, you've already gone to the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it when the vast majority of Americans have been polled, they do not feel optimistic about the future?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're apprehensive about it.
Well,
you just described why you, the three of us, are optimistic. All right.
Well, I'm not optimistic.
We have lived long enough to know that God is going to provide for our means.
That's right.
But I'm not optimistic
about
the economy.
We're talking about the people out there who are listening to it. So Biden is telling, yes, the economy is better. Yeah, you fixed what you broke, but it's now getting back to what it was under Trump. That's the problem. Yeah, it's better than when you – yeah, okay, let's – if you took COVID out of the picture to where – what Trump accomplished, okay? But, and, yes, the economy is better. Why do people not feel optimistic about the future?
Because,
why are they apprehensive?
Because they are actually paying bills, and they are seeing what's going out, and they realize they do not have the disposable income that they had. Mm-hmm. I'm talking disposable income. That's the issue.
Yeah.
So I'm talking when you realize
I've seen Christmas.
So let's look at Christmas.
They're talking about they're talking about retail sales and things like that. People are spending their credit cards. They're spending their credit cards to pay bills. I was there.
Let me finish.
Look, I had a job before I finally got hired by the federal government. I was making enough money in construction to pay my rent and my utilities, but not food. I was buying food with my credit card, and it had a fixed limit, and it was about to hit that limit.
Sure.
Okay.
And people are doing that. So that's what I'm saying.
I know. That's the thing.
So
when the politicians say, hey,
we got a lot of sales out there.
People are buying on credit because they're not making enough money to actually pay cash for it.
But it's more than
that's
that.
That's right.
It's more than that. It is the fact that now we're coming on the Christmas season when people normally spend money, and they're looking in, they're like, oh, I had to spend my savings to get through July. It was an extremely hot summer. You know, electric bills went up, all of this stuff. So, and I'm telling you, it went from I've never been lower in my personal savings account in my life. I had more money when I was in my 20s than I do now, and that's a fact. And I make 10 times the money that I made in my 20s. But it is all tied up, every penny. I don't have an additional. So if somebody calls and says, hey, you know, can I borrow $100? No. I don't have it to give to you. So that's just where we're at, you know, in society. And the difference between me and most people is that I'm at the point to where it's like, yeah, I don't care to tell you the truth about it. And a lot of people try to hide it. You know what I mean? Because there's this image, you know, you want this image that everything's okay. And especially if they voted and intend to vote the same way that they voted the last time, you know, it's kind of like cutting off their own nose to spite their face. The economy's horrible. It's horrible, guys. It's horrible for somebody to work.
Being in a building project at church. You know, you ask people, certainly they are faithful in their tithes and giving, but, you know, to give some extra so we could finish the thing. If people are strapped, I agree with you, James. Not
yeah.
because they're selfish, not because they're stingy, but it's because
right.
they've been robbing Peter to pay Paul.
True. True. So that's what I think about. And look, and it's by design. Okay. Now some people, you know, this is the part where people, it's like, what do you mean by design? Look, the more dependent you are on the government, so let's just say I can't pay my electric bill. Well, there's a program out there. I can go to the federal government and ask them to help me to pay my electric bill. The more dependent that our people become on the federal government, the closer we are to socialism
every minute.
Every minute. So that's my opinion on that. And I think that this is an economic push by design.
I'm going to agree with you on that.
So let's just think about shopping, though.
What?
That's an important piece, you know, looking at that dependence or codependence on government.
Right.
But when you go shopping, okay, we don't have little children anymore. You know, we have grandchildren. But how
you got
is
more
the
than me.
Present economy, yes. How is the present economy impacting us in our generosity in that way? Are we thinking twice this Christmas maybe that we didn't maybe two or three Christmases ago?
Hmm. Oh, we definitely are. That's for sure. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, we are. And as you know, for various reasons, but the disposable.
All right. All right. Let's back up.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
All three of us grew up poor. All three of us grew up poor.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Right.
Tell me about your best Christmas growing up poor. Tell me about your best Christmas gift growing up poor.
I had so many good Christmases because it wasn't focused on the gift.
It was focused
on the family get-together.
But I did not, and I watched my cousins get 30, 40, 50 gifts.
Yeah.
And I always got one, because my birthday's in January, a gift where they say, well, this is for Christmas and your birthday. And I have to be honest with you, until my wife, we had beautiful Christmas with the children, but growing up, it was painful because I had to watch all those who were more well-off than we were. The veterans sometimes would let us pick off the cart or take something for Christmas, like a shirt or something. It was very painful being poor. And so I can't say I've had many good Christmases at all.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
My wife healed that. My wife with the kids, I mean, my wife, she just made it beautiful for all the, you know, almost 48 years.
Let me ask you this, though. Okay, so what you're telling me is that your Christmases were bad in comparison with who?
My cousins and all those who were
all right, that's it. So you're all
and we
you're
were
all
with
having,
them. Yeah.
See, in your case, you're having this family Christmas, and
right.
you guys are coming out short. All right.
Yeah, Rich,
the thing
yeah.
was
yeah.
the reason I brought this up is because I remember growing up and before the divorce. We were the only grandkids, the only nephews. So, but then again, we didn't get a lot. We really didn't get a lot, but it was enough. That was the whole point. It was enough. We now lavish our kids with all
yeah.
these expensive gifts.
Yeah, our kids.
No
my
one
wife,
ever spent that much up on us when we were
that's
growing
right.
up,
that's,
and
that's
we were.
Exactly right.
I, with the exception of you, I mean, we got anything, we were happy about it. Yeah, it was
my
all
mother
relative.
Worked for Lionel Trains. She was able mm-hmm. to get them for my cousin, but we couldn't afford it. for us.
Oh, that's too bad, yeah.
And I was a good trombone player, and the teacher said you should buy him a trombone. They laughed because we could just barely eat, you know. So, you know, all that's been healed by good experiences, but I feel bad for people who see people prospering and they know they're not going to get much. And, yeah, it's more about giving. I get that. But it's also very hurtful when it seems like you've got burdens from the government, just like Saul, you know, overtaxed the people. And, you know, that song from Oliver Anthony that we heard a few months back. And I think that's a reality. And I just don't feel it. Rich, I appreciate all that you've brought up to us and all the statistics and everything, but it just doesn't seem that there's the hope for the future, especially for our young people.
Yeah. And I think the difference between, well, I'm going to tell you what, that World War II generation. Let me bring
my
up
parents.
These guys. Well, the thing is, these are the guys I interviewed for my first book. All right. I knew them. I grew up with them. But when I was writing The Filthy 13, this is where I sat down and I interviewed them. And especially Mark Gardner. If you watch the movie, A Bridge Too Far. Okay. All those guys had the same answer when they asked these questions. This is what I learned.
So,
they had grown up. They had come of age during the Depression.
Right.
And when we sit there and we're saying, okay, people are missing the conversation you and I had. Why is there no optimism today?
Mm-hmm.
See, during the Depression, all these social welfare programs that, you know, FDR, Franklin D. Roosevelt, enacted, actually, economists will tell you, delayed the recovery. But everybody felt optimistic. Why? Because of his fireside chat. Every week he was on the radio. We have to work together. We have to work together, and it will get better. Now, he's enacting all these policies that's delaying it. And then as soon as the war breaks out and the economy booms, okay, because war production, you know, we had a war – that left us with this idea of a wartime economy.
Right.
And then these – same young men who grew up in the Depression, listening to FDR, talk to him on the radio every week, tell him it's all going to work out. And then he sends them off. We are an underrated country. And I tell you, I told you that, you know, I had a German officer, a World War II German officer. And I asked him, I said, so what did you think of the American Army? He looks at me and he says, I hope you don't take this as offense, but you guys were not very good, right? And I've read the reports, and he echoed it. He had a higher opinion of the British Army than we did, okay? The difference was this, and almost every World War II vet I ever talked to went into the war. Yeah, we were not efficient. We won by mass. But here's the thing. Every American soldier that went to Europe and fought in the Pacific knew, all right, in Europe, they're going, this war's not going to be over until we get to Berlin. And the sooner we get to Berlin, it's going to be over. And it's going to require sacrifice. They grew up in the Depression realizing we have to sacrifice for a common good.
Right.
If we work together, we are going to get out of this. And then that generation went into World War II and beat two of the best armies in the world, the best army in Europe and the best army in Asia, because they were willing to make sacrifices.
No, that's
for
compelling.
A common good.
Mm-hmm.
That's what made them the greatest generation.
Yeah. You know,
and
both my
what?
Parents were born in 1918.
No, guess what? They mm-hmm. came home and created the greatest era of prosperity, the largest middle class.
Mm-hmm.
You
go
through
my
history, you will never find a greater period of prosperity, economic prosperity, than post-World
But they
War
also
II.
Indulged in us, and they produced the children of the 60s.
No, they produced
60s,
the baby boomers. Who what? The establishment is, you know, everything they created that was good became bad. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You're working for the man, right? Yeah. We were pampered. Our generation was pampered. Some of us decided to make the same sacrifices that our parents did. That generation, you know, that grew up in this period of prosperity became greedy, became the generation of greed.
That's right. That's very right. That's very true. You know, the moderation. No, because, I mean, having two wars, I had like four uncles that served. I know one of my uncles was there for 4 years. And, you know, after you go through that kind of hell, you know, just one happy days are here again. And I know that there was some letting loose, but there was a lot of prosperity, and there was a thriving middle class, which we're losing rapidly.
Right. Well, I'm sure you've all heard, you know, that saying that hard times make strong men. Strong men make good times. Good times make weak men.
Mm-hmm.
And weak men make hard times.
Yeah.
That's a cycle. That's a cycle.
Yeah, you're right. It's true. And I don't know, with the leadership presently and, you know, different economic philosophies, I've been thinking about President Bush or President Trump's main financial advisor. And there's a different philosophy. You know, I guess years ago, I mean, when I was coming up in Newark, New Jersey, in the projects, we had to have a savings account in school. I gave my nickel every week, Howard Savings. I think we've gotten away from, with the credit cards, you know, this instant gratification.
Right.
There's no sense of what we had in the past. And I think even saving for down payment, you know, we were fortunate, even though I had some help, you know, from the church I was serving, because of our VA benefits, we were able to purchase home without a down payment. That's a great benefit for our sacrifices.
Yeah.
And that's the only asset I've had, you know, over the years. It's been wonderful. James, are you there? Do we need to have a prayer in about 2 minutes? I guess not. No, but I think what we're talking about as far as optimism, I don't think it's there, nor do I think the motivation is there. You talked earlier about work ethic.
Yeah.
You know, what was it? Thomas Edison said that all his situation was 2% inspiration, 98% perspiration. That's sweat equity. So I don't have any money.
All right. But here's it. Let's get back to the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The divisiveness in politics is destroying our future. The divisiveness in politics is destroying
That's
our
right.
future. Okay. And, I mean, we're listening to the Democrats telling us that if Trump gets elected, we're going to see the end of democracy.
Yeah.
All right. So this fear-mongering is causing the Democrats to do things to end democracy. For example, do you know that Florida, the Democratic National Convention in Florida, has said there will be no primary election? If you're
mean,
in Florida,
as far as anybody running against the president,
yeah,
you mean?
No, they basically look. If you look at when the Democratic Party was running against Trump, guess what? At least the Republican look. Jeb Bush was the heir apparent for the Republican Party.
Yeah,
and Trump rose up because the Republicans had a. They still believed in the voters, but the Democratic Party said, "No, we want Hillary." They stacked the deck to only Hillary. Super, what is it? Super delegates and stuff like that. It was stacked against Bernie Sanders.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I was just
right
saying.
Now we. Then there was Biden. Look, we're seeing we're seeing the Democratic Party, basically the DNC, is we pick the candidate and you vote for him. In Florida, there will be no primary.
Yep.
That's
well,
a fact. That is a fact.
I hate to do this, guys, but we got 60 seconds, so I just want to say to everybody, thank you for joining us tonight on Continue Mission, folks. You know, we wish you all a Merry Christmas. Father Michael, can you close us out with a prayer real quick, sir?
Yes. The blessing of God Almighty, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen. Lord, we thank you for the great gift of Christmas, Jesus Christ, our Savior and Lord. Amen.
Amen. Well, folks, thank you for joining us tonight on Continue Mission. Remember to catch us every Friday from 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern Standard Time. And for my West Coasters out there, hey, you still got a whole lot of the night left. It's only 9 o'clock out there on the West Coast, folks. Be good to each other. God bless you, and have a great weekend. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.